Today on The Grave Talks, a conversation about haunted Cochise County, a new book by author Francine Powers. Southeastern Arizona is haunted by its violent past. Some of the most notorious characters in American history once called Cochise County home. It's probably best known for the gunfight at the OK Corral, and you can pay your respects to those who died that day at the Boot Hill Cemetery. In fact, in this episode, we're going to talk about some of those people who died that day and the hauntings at Boot Hill Cemetery. I'm Carol Hughes, and on this episode of The Grave Talks, we'll discuss those stories and more from the book Haunted Cochise County with author and paranormal historian Francine Powers. And there's another story that you have in the book about a Bisbee fireman.
Yes, and that is fire station number 2. And that's up Tombstone Canyon. And they call it Tombstone Canyon because that road leads to Tombstone. So that's just a little trivia there. The fire station is about a mile from my childhood home. So I would, you know, pass it every day going to school because I went to Lincoln Elementary School. So I grew up going on field trips. My friend's dad was a fireman and he actually just retired. And then I went to high school or school with some of the firemen and they're there and they're about ready to retire. Back in 2008, 2009, I had a best friend who was married to the captain. So I have a lot of ties with the fire station there. He knew that, you know, I wrote about ghosts. I was interested in ghosts and stuff. And he said that there is a ghost in our fire station. After going through the city and the fire chief, and so we were able to do a ghost hunt, and I interviewed some of the retired men. What they tell me is that in the 1970s, there was a gentleman, and I know his name, but I do not say it, because he died, you know, in the 70s, so that's pretty recent to me. I know everybody in town, and I don't want to disrespect them. They know what I'm saying, and they know about him, but I just don't like to say his name. So that's why I'm not mentioning it. But anyway, he's a firefighter who worked in the 70s and he worked with a fire captain. So they worked there and they in the front of the fire station, there is a piped fence It's irrigated because of the rain and the floods, because it floods really bad. So over the years, they engineered these ditches, which are about 15 to 20 feet deep. And so they'll fill up halfway and it'll run like a river. The fire station, and then there's a cement bridge that goes over that deep ditch. And then they have pipe fences. On one side of it, there's a rack that the firemen in the 70s did. They made it themselves. And it's a drying rack and they actually put their fire hose over it and it dries. So, you know, it's unique. So, this gentleman in the 1970s didn't show up, for his shift. And so Mr. Perez, he went looking for him and he knew he lived over down by a convenience store, a Circle K. So he went over there and he didn't answer when he knocked. He went in and he saw his friend and he had been shot by a gun. He was dead. At first, they thought it was suicide, but then some things were found out and now they're not sure. So that's kind of a mystery of actually how that gentleman died. Mr. Perez said that same firefighter was one of his best friends and he was a big jokester. And he said, if I ever die, I'm going to come back and haunt this place. So he knows it's him. And this happened in, like I said, the 70s. And this is 2023. And to this day, the firefighters who have worked there will openly share to you the ghost of the fire station. People have seen him, actually the apparition, go through a wall by the kitchen. Back in 1993, they actually remodeled the entire upstairs where the men used to have their cots and sleep. Now they've been put in the back with actual bedrooms, and then the kitchen is now where their bedroom used to be. So it's flipped. So they think that the spirit ghost actually is seeing it the way it used to be. So that's why he actually walks through a wall when there used to not be a wall. They have seen wet footprints coming out of a bathroom when nobody has been in there. They hear the shower running. Doors will be unlocked as soon as they secure them at night. They hear the pots and pans jiggling around. And downstairs is where they originally used to have the horses. This was built in 1914, so they used to have the whole wagon fire, the fire wagons with the horses, and they used to stall them. And now they have the fire engines and a fire engine and a ambulance. And the fire engines are custom ordered because they have to be very narrow to get in the streets in Bisbee because, the majority of them are original. They haven't been widened and they were actually engineered for the width of wagons. So, a regular fire engine can't go up these mountains and hills. And so they have to have a very narrow one. And if they can't get their fire engine to a house, they actually have trained these guys in Old Bisbee, to take the fire truck, park it at the bottom of the hill, and they know all the trails to get to the house with the fire hose.
Oh.
So yeah, it's incredible.
It is. That's a tough job anyway, but when they have to go to that effort to put out a fire, that's a lot.
It is one of the things that they, besides all of that, they give them a kind of an initiation for working at the fire station, and they'll leave them alone and they'll tell them to go and, you know, do this and that, or to make everything sure everything's secure. And so it's kind of funny, you know, to this day. And they'll hear tinkering downstairs by the fire truck, and there's a tool, you know, a whole bench there. Tool bench, and you can hear someone, you know, moving around. They know it's him. They hear there's a steep set of stairs that go, because they have an actual fire pole still there. They don't use it, but it's like one of the very few that are in the state of Arizona still. They can hear someone walking up the steps, you know, coming down the steps. So when I was able to do the first ghost hunt there, which is really cool. And so there was four of us. And we were doing EVP work in the back bedrooms. They have a lot of bedrooms, even though there's only two firefighters on shift. It's because they also house hot shots, the fire crews for forest fires.
Right.
If there's a forest fire somewhere near Bisbee, they'll house them in that fire station. So there's several bedrooms in there. So I was in one of them. And so we were just, you know, talking and trying to get something off of it. And then a call came in, and it really, you know, it buzzes in that little place because they have a little station room, radio room. So we were quiet, but I kept recording. You can hear the dispatcher, a female, saying to one of the firefighters in the building that it was a health emergency. So it wasn't a fire. And then, so they're communicating. The woman is explaining what, and then they give the address. And in the EVP recording, you can hear the voice of a man right near me saying, moving, like he was on shift. And that was something he would say. He's on his way.
Yeah.
So the firemen, you know, they know about it. You know, some of them have heard it, and they're like, that's what we would say when we're answering back. So we know that he's there listening. He still thinks he's on shift. Other firefighters, when they're sleeping, they have felt someone put their hand on their forehead. They felt, if their hand is hanging off the bed, they feel someone tapping their hand to wake up. So it's just, you know, really cool. And, so one of the last things, which I thought was amazing is, again, I would, you know, give tours and, or special events. I was out there telling the history and some of the things I just told you, and people were gathered, and a lot of people were leaning on that same pipe fence. And this one woman decided she was going to sit on it. And when she got herself up on it, she started losing her balance and her arm went up. She like jumped off of it. And then she had to interrupt and say, I almost fell in. And someone grabbed my arm and pulled me off. She said, it's the dead fireman. He saved my life. Because if she would have fell back, she would have cracked her head. And, you know, it would have been bad. We know that he's still there. And his spirit as a person is a caregiver and, you know, a saver, a hero. Because that's what most people who go into that career do. They care about people. He's still doing it. And the firemen just love him.
I think it's interesting. Somewhat, you think of ghosts as old timey. They're dressed in period. Like the one that you saw, she was dressed differently. It's different when it's someone you might know who that is. Or they really do think it's that person. The 70s aren't that long ago. I just think that that's really interesting that it could be him.
And in the community, the fire department know all about him. And, you know, like I said, a lot of people are still alive that knew him and worked with him, and the family's still there. So I try to talk about it in the best way I can without seeming any disrespect at all.
Does the family, do they have any inkling that they think that's their loved one who haunts there?
Mr. Perez actually talked to the family the first time I interviewed him all those years ago. And we were on another show, a online show came in, FearNet, and they actually filmed over there. He said, that he had talked to them and asked for their permission, and they were fine with it. And as a person, it doesn't bother them. But like I said, I just don't say his name.
But I just think it would be really interesting if you were a family member and you could possibly go there and have an interaction that might be kind of healing and good for you at the same time.
Right.
Because he was a good, caring person.
Yes. And it's still showing through.
I will ask you real quick, just out of curiosity, that Boot Hill Cemetery, since there are some people buried there who died in that gunfight at the OK Corral, is there evidence of hauntings in that cemetery?
Yes. And in my cover for Haunted Cochise County, that is actually the burial site for the men who died in the shootout. They allowed me to do a ghost hunt, and they're really great. A lot of the people that you approach, you know, they're so amazing. You know, they want to share. They want to get the history out there too. Boot Hill has a fascinating, I think they have a Boot Hill in Kansas too, don't they?
Yes,
they
have them out by Dodge City, Kansas.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, they get that from dying with their boots on, mm-hmm. from being shot and killed, right? Mm-hmm. So Boot Hill was the pioneer cemetery in Tombstone, and eventually it deteriorated, or they had to make a new one, and now it's a Tombstone Cemetery, and people are buried there now. But yeah, this is an iconic part of the area, Cochise County, and there's about 250 markers in the cemetery. A lot of them are just markers, and some of them actually have people interred there. And so they do tell me that the three men who died at the OK Corral are buried there. That in a sense is back to, you know, you have to have a true history before you go ghost hunting, because you might be ghost hunting something that's not real. So during the ghost hunt, it was really interesting. Again, the tying the communities together, Bisbee and Tombstone. We had some experiences with the guys from the shootout, OK Corral. And I got some EVPs from that. We had the Bisbee Massacre. And that was in 1883 in Bisbee on Main Street. And there was actually a group of bandits that came in. And they were after the payroll from the mining company. They had a shootout because they were just kind of ruffians. They were just also troublemakers. Because of that, there was a gentleman named John Heath. He wasn't actually there, but they later found out that he was the actual person who thought of it up. And so they arrested him too. But the guys who killed on the street were actually sentenced to hang, and John Heath wasn't, and he was going to get a life sentence at the Yuma jail. So he was in jail in Tombstone. A Bisbee mob decided they were going to go down to Bisbee and get a hold of Heath because they were afraid that he was actually going to get himself to the Supreme Court and, you know, get off on it or get away with it. And they thought he deserved to die just like the other ones. So they went down to the Tombstone Courthouse and they got him out of his jail cell. And because the sheriff at the time thought breakfast was going to be served because they got there at 8 a.m, he opened the door unarmed. They went past and got his, the key, got John Heath. They put a rope around his waist. They drug him out. And, it's different now, at the courthouse, the original courthouse in Tombstone. They moved to jail cells, but at the time there used to be a different entry and it was higher up and it had a set of stairs with a banister. So when they were pulling Heath out, some of them just wanted to throw him over the banister and hang him there. But the actual crowd was moving down on, this is on Tuffnut Street, and they were setting up at a telegraph pole. They pulled him down there. He said that he was innocent, but please cover his eyes. He gave him a bandana and they put it over his face. And he says, please don't riddle my body with bullets. And they strung him up and they killed him. There's a very famous photo and it's in my book, both books. And those guys that were charged are buried there at Tombstone. John Heath is not. He was from Texas. But so it was interesting to go and stand around these graves. And, you know, I brought my husband and my son and daughter and my grandson. They're all, you know, teenagers, except for my daughter's in her 30s. But so we were sitting there talking and we were asking them questions, but we were talking to them, you know, like from their time. And some of the comments that were made, we put an EMF detector there and it would light up as soon as we would say certain things. One of the boys at the OK Corral plot said, well, you should have shot better because, you know, said that they were dead. And that thing lit up and they were talking to him and, you know, they were close to their age when they died. So it was interesting to see how those ghosts were reacting to language in their time. And they were rough. And so we got a lot of things off of that too. And then there's another plot of the Brady boys, the Brady brothers. There were two boys who drowned in the San Pedro River. One was drowned. The other one went in and instead just tried to save them. Instead, they both drowned. So there's a gentleman who used to be the manager at the Boot Hill Graveyard gift shop. That's where you go in first and then you buy a ticket and go into the cemetery. He said that he tried do something with his phone, you know, a ghost box type thing, a ghost app. And so he turned it on. And then he said that almost instantly, it went on and then it named on his screen and he took pictures of it. They came in one after another. And it said, the first one said rage. Then the second screen said bed. The third one said bottom. And then flow. And then he's all, what? And then the very last one, it came up and said Brady. So he knew it was those boys who were trying to communicate with him. And so that was one of the first things I did. I went over to the Brady Brothers plot and I started talking to them. And I felt like one was more trying to communicate with me than the other because they're buried together. And my son and grandson, they came when they were walking up to the plot and I could really feel like they were very excited. And then we were there for a while. So then, they went away. They walked far away and I was recording and I was talking to them and I was, you know, letting them know that I was there to please, you know, if you have anything to say, tell me. So when I got home and I went over my evidence on the recording, I can hear a young boy. I'd never heard that voice before. It was a stranger. I was the only one standing there. Over in the EVP recording, it says, I grabbed his hair. And then I'm like, what? In the recording, you can hear the disembodied voice say, make him kick off. So those two terms, along with the evidence that the former manager of the gift shop put together, it's obvious that this young man was still trying to communicate with us and telling us what happened.
Do you think by the hair comment that it was his brother he had grabbed his hair, or
that he was grabbing at him and he grabbed his hair.
Oh.
And he was, you know, trying out. Can you imagine?
Oh. Well, and you wonder why some souls can't rest in peace. And that would be, you know, if you went through something really traumatic like that, I could see why you couldn't rest in peace.
So, you know, Blue Hill is really interesting. And it's, and it is a grave site, and it's an actual graveyard. And it is hollow ground. You know, some of it, of course, was blessed or prayed over. But, you know, it all ties to the time that we're talking about, you know, early history.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, like we were just talking about the fire station with the ghost from the set 1970s. You know, I think like the older Cochise County started in 1881. Pretty much everybody was there with booming towns, and money was coming in fast, and people were traveling from around the world to these places. And so I think that's why there might be more ghosts that are from that time. But, you know, with Arizona, I think that's why people really tie it with the 1800s and the early 1900s.
Mm-hmm. People can pick up two books. One is Haunted Bisbee and the other is Haunted Cochise County. And I got the feeling there's going to be another one soon.
Yes, I'm working on Wicked Bisbee. And that is actually straight history. So it's going to be more of the same, but without the ghost. And it's a little bit more graphic. As I have been working on this book, I've had to have a day or two away from my writing because it's so, it affects me so much.
I would imagine from what we've just discussed in these episodes that there's been some pretty dark things happen in that area.
Yes.
Just because we've heard of them.
With my haunted books, you know, I come from a background of research. And so anything that I cover is like, if you're not even interested in ghosts, you can still get these books because of the history. So all I'm doing is going into another without the ghost experiences. It's pretty much the same book, but a little worse.
But it would be a great read. Maybe not one right before bed, but it would be a great read.
Yeah.
I want to say thank you so much for your time. It's been great to talk to you. And I really, really appreciate it. So thank you so very much.
Oh, thank you for having me.
And that wraps up our conversation with author and paranormal historian Francine Powers. If you'd like access to all of our episodes, including the archive and advanced episodes, you can find everything commercial free by becoming a Gravekeeper. Sign up on Apple Podcasts. You can try it 3 days free there. Go to patreon.com/thegravetalks. Find everything there as well, all ad free. For all of us at The Grave Talks, I'm Carol Hughes, and thank you for listening.